The descent from the ridge was more dangerous and difficult than Ryan had hoped. The trail had vanished, running out on the bare expanse of granite and wind-washed scree that lay just over the far side, before the trees began. The loose mass of tiny stones shifted as they started to move across it, with the risk of it gathering force into a full avalanche that might dash them helplessly into the valley far below, where the muty pigs were waiting.
Run it. Follow me, like this.
Okay, Dad.
The only safe way to get over the wide bed of scree was to run, taking great, bounding strides, using the shingled movement of the stones to actually help you on your way. Never waiting to let your feet sink deep into the sucking morass of pebbles, always keeping on the move. It took great physical strength and agility, and Ryan was immediately aware of how much his wound was going to hinder him and slow him. Every leaping step tugged the bandages away, opening the puckered holes wider, bringing a trickle of blood down over his buttocks and thighs.
Ah, fire blast!
It's great, Dad!
Dean was close behind him, soon overtaking him. He moved ahead of his father with an easy grace, toward the end of the scree and the beginning of the dense forest of dark, spiky pines.
Slow up, Dean. Get down and slide on your ass to slow.
The boy heard him, waving a casual hand to acknowledge the instruction. But he found his own more effective way of slowing, zigzagging back and forth in short, tight turns, like an eager sailboat tacking up a narrow, winding channel against a strong headwind.
Damn kids.
Ryan tried to emulate his son. He could barely stand the extra pressure it put on his back, nearly losing control and rolling helplessly. But he fought the slide, gradually checking the frightening and exhilarating speed, reaching out and finally stopping himself by embracing the trunk of an elderly larch. His knees were trembling, his palms sweating, his fingers shaking. Dean was to his right, punching his fist in the air in triumph.
That was a real triple hot pipe, Dad. Best fun in ages.
Pretty good, huh?
How's that arrow wound, Dad?
Been better. Thanks.
Ryan tried to ignore the steady warmth of fresh blood leaking through his clothes.
Now what?
Now we keep our voices down. Pigs will have heard all that whooping, but they can't see us this high up. We move through the trees, slow and careful. I want to try and get up to the head of the canyon.
Under the spread branches, there were piles of dust-dry needles and cones, enough to start a lethally ferocious fire if you weren't really careful. Or, if you were careful.
What's the signal, Dad?
I'll fire a single shot into the air. Even with a silencer, the noise should carry easily enough, even out of the Box Canyon.
Might bring the brushwooders in after us if they're in the area.
If they were going to come, they'd have been on our heels by now. Haven't seen or heard a sign of them. Could be that they're chasing after Christy and the others. So when you get your fire lit, watch out. You're in more danger out on the trail than me snug in the canyon here.
Dean's face was bright with an unholy delight.
Love to see their fucking faces when they first see what's coming rumbling their way.
Don't say fucking, Dean.
Trader says it all the time.
Trader's his own man. Always was and always will be. That's a problem between him and me since Abe brought him back to us. I'm the leader now. Trader can't settle to that. It's like him having a sand burr under his saddle. I've turned from being his trusted right-hand man for all those years to an itch that he somehow can't get to scratch.
Will you have to fight him, Dad?
It was a question that had been on Ryan's mind ever since the grizzled old man with the battered armalite had reappeared in his life.
I hope not.
You could beat him, Dad. No worries.
You think so, boy?
Ryan ruffled the mat of his son's curly hair.
Sure. You're old, but he's even older.
My kingdom for a jacuzzi.
They reached the ville exhausted, drained of fire and hope, a little after the middle of the day, to be greeted by a burst of weeping and anger once their dire news had been passed on. They held a council of war within the hour, prompted by J.B. and Christy. Baron Wayman attended, along with his son and Bill Rainey. Trader sat at the end of the big refectory table, his gun across his lap, staring up at the ceiling.
We have to go back and find Ryan and Dean.
Rainey shook his head.
Don't have enough men left for that. I tell you straight, Outlander, that I doubt we even have enough to defend the Ville against an out-and-out attack. They can get up and over the walls, and we don't have the Sekhmen to cover the defensive perimeter.
Baron Wayman was rubbing a finger along the angle of his jaw, as if he were trying to decide whether he needed to have a shave.
In that case, I can see little point in waiting to have our throats cut by these lice-ridden mongrels. We will stand against them.
Jamie leapt to his feet.
Then, Father, I will stand at your right hand and keep the bridge with you.
Despite the tenseness of the situation, Doc smiled.
You're familiar with the holding of the bridge over the Tiber against the forces of Lars Porsena of Clusium. By the Nine Gods, he swore that the proud house of Tarquin should suffer wrong no more, if my memory has it properly remembered. I am delighted to see that learning is not yet quite gone from Deathlands, and all judgment is not yet fled to brutish beasts.
He looked around to see everyone staring at him.
My apologies, friends. But it is those same brutish beasts that confront us now. I would say only that Ryan's instructions were to wait here for him. I think that we should do that.
What do we do if those brushwood bastards come, Doc? Ask him to just wait a while until Ryan gets back here?
They won't attack until dusk. But Doc's right. We should do what Ryan said. We can still cover our asses. My plan is to set out a watch on the trails from the west and north. Only way they can come at us. As soon as we get a warning, we go out and ambush them. We passed some good places for that within the last quarter mile. They won't expect that, and we can use our firepower to cut them apart.
Trader patted the table approvingly.
I'll be hung, quartered, and dried for the crows. You did learn something all those years, John Dix. Good plan.
Ryan hoped his plan was a good one. Like a lot of them, it seemed fine when you sat down and thought about it. When you came to try it out on the ground, you started to worry about all of the imponderables. One small slip, and the scheme would be in tatters. He adjusted the white silk scarf with its weighted ends around his neck. He sat by the great heap of brushwood that he and Dean had dragged together. The boy would be doing the same, out in the narrow neck of the trail east toward the ville, ready to light the wood on the signal and block off that way of escape. Ryan's fire should panic the muty pigs and send them stampeding out of the Box Canyon with only one way to go, west toward the vulnerable camp of the brushwooders. This was one of the key elements of the plan. If it worked, the men, women, and children would totally freak when they saw what was charging at them. They had only one way to escape, back west along the treacherous trail toward the land of the Scabbies, then out into the bubbling death trap of the Sulphur Swamps. Ryan's profound hope was that the terror of finding themselves in the path of the killer stampede would lead to the brushwooders fleeing, hopefully to their deaths. The possibility that women and children might also die wasn't a factor in Ryan's plan. The quality of mercy wasn't an issue when dealing with a murderous tribe like the brushwooders. The ending from a snippet of an old vid came to Ryan as he got ready to set his own fire.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Suddenly, General, the giant among the muty pigs, surged into attack.
Fuck!
For such a vast creature, General moved with an uncanny lightness and speed. Ryan was caught cold, on his hands and knees, the Sig-Sauer snugly and uselessly holstered, the 18-inch steel panga sheathed on his other hip. His right hand held a self-light, ready to ignite his fire. His left hand was supporting him in the dirt.
Double fuck!
Ryan glanced over his shoulder, seeing the imposing figure of the monstrous pig rushing at him, its head lowered, the unbroken tusk aimed at his chest. Ryan dropped the self-light and picked up a handful of dust in his left hand, throwing it into the boar's face and simultaneously hurling himself to one side. The ground shook as the muty beast, temporarily blinded, swerved away, hooking in Ryan's direction, the tusk brushing against the hem of Ryan's coat. It had been charging so fast that it couldn't stop immediately and blundered helplessly into the pile of dry wood and brush. It turned, tossing the carefully prepared bonfire all around, stamping its hooves in rage. The slight delay gave Ryan a moment to recover his balance. He rolled up onto his hands and knees, poised to move. Ryan drew the panga, biting his lip as the gigantic pig finally readied itself for a second charge. It shook its head twice, trying to rid its eyes of the dust, and pawed at the ground. Its jaws gaped, showing rows of savage teeth. A thread of green slime dribbled from the blunt mouth.